Okay, I'll go ahead and get started. My name is Edward Arakinji. I work at Marshall University Computing Services. I'm a system administrator. I do system administration. We manage the data center. I'm not one of those experts that you probably run through in other sessions. I don't work at VMware, obviously, and I don't do VMware every day. And actually, last year about this time, I didn't know what the heck is ESX. And I used the workstation and stuff, but no enterprise product. And in 9 months, I had 8 ESX servers in production, implementing all the features of ESX. We have virtual center and all that. We got upgraded to VI3 and HA, DRS, and all that. I wish we could get 100% virtualized, but 95 was more than we were expecting to get in the first 6 to 7 months. What I want to do is tell you a story about what we did in 2006. Hopefully it's not going to be bedtime story, so I won't find everybody sleeping. My daughter likes me to tell her a story when she's not sleepy, because I think she finds my accent good way to let her fall asleep. So I hope nobody's going to fall asleep here. And like I said, I want to share our experience with fellow system administrators, and hopefully you'll find something here to learn about. The presentation is broken into three parts: planning, implementation, and operation best practices. Marshall University is a West Virginia State University. We have 16,000 students. I'm proud to be a student, faculty, and staff. I wish I could play football, so I would be doing all kinds of activities. Our data center is fairly small, 2,200 server. We're Dell, EMC, Cisco, and Microsoft shop. We have 90% Windows, 10% Red Hat. RTI is a research institution at Marshall University. They have about 50 staff, being professor, graduate assistants, and students. And it was established by Congressman Rehoff. Most of the work they do is transportation and economic development, and they use GIS and databases extensively. Most of the servers that they had were very powerful to support big Oracle databases and GIS applications. TEDIS is the name of the project. I think I have the name here. This is RPI servers. They have a machine room, what we call a machine room inside our machine room. They had only 3 racks, but they have their own firewalls. They have VPN concentrators, content switches, 9 servers, 10 servers, and 11 terabytes of storage. Most of what they have is Windows, Oracle, SQL Server, and Azure GIS applications. One of the primary reasons for the whole project was they wanted to store ortho images, image data of the whole state, terabytes of data, of image data, and do some process on those images that requires a lot of CPU, memory, and network bandwidth. So they got that hardware, they put those in our data center, and I was personally assigned to manage that environment. So this is my baby. This is not about the decision to go with virtualization. I wasn't part of the decision, actually. It kind of followed me because there is an SLA between Marshall University Computing Services and RCI to manage their servers, and that includes footprint in the machine room, cooling, power, and full-time employee, which is me. And they wanted to expand their operations. They wanted more servers, but still they wanted to stay in the same footprint, and virtualization one of the decisions. The other reason for their decision was that they wanted to isolate the physical servers from the operating system. So in case, I think next year, they will run out of warranty, they wanted to replace the servers, they wanted less headache. So once they get the machines on a VM, they don't care about the hardware, they can replace the hardware easily. And the other reason was provisioning. Every time a group of developers at RCI wanted a new server, they had to go through a process 3 to 4 weeks after they get approval, after they get the purchase orders, everything, just when they place the order to get the server in place. And 5-10 minutes is also after they get the approval and paperwork. But I can say that in 24 hours we can get them a set of servers with the full stack they wanted, SQL, Oracle, with GIS apps and everything they wanted, just like that. The target was 100% virtualized environment. We couldn't get there, as you will see, because we needed the physical server for backup, proxy, and we ran out of HBAs. So hopefully by the end of this year we'll be 100% virtualized. One nice thing I wanted to say is, I didn't know anything about ESX. Nobody in the university knew anything about ESX, and we wanted to do that. We didn't hire a consultant. We're geeks. We want to know how it works. So most of what I got my information was VMware documentation. And I want to mention the user forums, the VNTN discussion forums. Anybody here a forum warrior? Thanks. Because I got a lot of problems solved by just looking at the forums. So resources are available. Look for them. Anybody in the back can read this? I don't expect anybody to read it. The bottom line here is that we did a lot of planning. We didn't get the licenses until, I think, later January, and the project started at the beginning of January, so I spent the whole month trying to get a plan. I wanted everybody to be involved, and I wanted to have a plan with the schedule. And this is usually in operations, system administration operation, we don't do a lot of project management. We just do operational stuff. So we don't have planning. But I wanted to have everything in a plan, and every morning I'll get there and see, where am I, what should I do now? The other thing that we did during that month is we sit down, both computing services and RPI, IT management, to decide which machine we want to target first. Since we didn't know a lot, we wanted to go incrementally. So we started first by the most powerful machines, the machines with 8 to 12 gigs of memory, and then move on. And one thing that we weren't sure about was involving users. Should we start get the users on board from the first day, or should we just let them know after we get everything virtualized, hey, your machine now is on a VM? We didn't know what to do. And this was something that we needed. I think that we should have let them be involved in the beginning, because some of them didn't like the idea to send them a email message saying that tomorrow we'll have, I mean, during the weekend maintenance window, we'll have your machine P2V to a virtual machine, and they didn't know anything. If we didn't know anything about virtualization, how would we expect them to know? So I think that this is one of the challenges we had, one of the things that we learned, that even end users should be, end users here are developers. They know, you know, programming and GIS applications. So we should sit down with them, let them learn virtualization, and learn from them the specific characteristics of their servers, because some of the machines, after we virtualized them, we didn't know exactly how much memory we would give them and how much CPU. We had to make some changes later. I wish we sit down with them and got those on paper, saying this machine has a GIS application, has a lot of process, a CPU process, will give it more resources. The first thing that we did as part of the plan is to upgrade all the hardware, even though they're at the edge of their life, at the limit, and we're about to, the support was about to expire, the machines are pretty old, not pretty old, I mean just 2650s, we're looking at 2950s, so we made that decision to go and bump the memory to the maximum, and that was a very good decision. We extended the life of the machines by adding more memory. We could put more VMs on existing servers. So with the less amount of money, we expanded the infrastructure to support 64 gigs of memory and 12 CPUs. So we didn't care about how many servers we actually have, what kind of servers we have. We just wanted the whole pool of resources. And we got the 8 servers that we had in 6 or 7 months, we got to 36 VMs, and nobody complained. So the bottom line here, upgrade the hardware to the maximum. Because you have, you know, fans and power supplies and all that. Resource utilization is to use those for the highest number of VMs. Part of the plan also is to document every change that we want to do. Do you have a question?
So 2 minutes for each VM
server? We had 2 NICs. We added dual port NIC cards. So we had 4 NICs total. That was part of the plan.
How many holes were on each?
I'm sorry?
How many VM holes were on each?
On every ESX server, we have maximum of 6 currently. 6 VMs on every ESX, but I think it can handle more. So part of the plan, we had everything documented. You know the saying that if it's not documented, it didn't happen. We used another saying, if it's not documented, it's not going to happen. So everything that we needed to do was documented, not everything, but we were trying to have everything, even IP addresses and VLANs and everything, because we had the whole month to plan for this. So that was very helpful. We didn't have anything to think about or sit down. The implementation was only 20% of the time. I like graphics and stuff, but this is not about the whole graphic thing. The only thing that I need to say here is that small re-architecture. We didn't have to do a lot of changes to our architecture. RPI had those 2 VLANs. In a university environment, as many of you know, we have thousands of students on campus, and those research projects need to be protected from the rest of the network. So we treated the university network as DMZ. So we put firewall between Ted's project and Marshall, and there is another firewall between Marshall and the internet. And the only thing that we changed here, we created a new VLAN. We already had a management VLAN only for the storage arrays for SAN, But we put the ESX servers on the same VLAN. This VLAN has zero external access. There is no external access. What I mean external access, it's not the internet. It's outside the firewall to Marshall. So even, not only Marshall students are blocked from accessing ESX, even employee, even IT employee in Marshall University cannot access the ESX server VLAN. Only my VLAN, only my workstation and my colleague's workstation can access ESX servers. We think this is a good practice for security, and it didn't require a whole re-architecture. It's just a small change. Any question about the planning part? I'll go ahead with the implementation. So once we got the license code, we started the implementation. First, we split the network to two VLANs, each VLAN on a different switch. And as you can see, the VM kernel for vMotion and the service console NICs are connected to the protected VLAN with no external access. And the virtual machines are connected to another switch with access to other resources. Well, I made a lot of changes to this. Talking about the four NICs, the first few months, we used VMware best practice of having one NIC for Service Console, another NIC for vMotion, and we shared all the virtual machines with two NICs. We tried something else. We put three NICs for VMs and one NIC shared by Service Console and VM kernel. Actually, that worked just fine. It worked like a charm. We didn't do a lot of vMotion anyway, and we configured two network non-routable IP address range, so we didn't have any noise between the two, and it worked just great. So this is what we're having now. We have three NICs for VMs because we needed more network bandwidth. Actually, we had some issues with network when we were using only two NICs. We had the NIC teaming was MAC-based. We changed that to IP-based. That helped a little bit. The other thing, adding the third NIC was also a good boost for network bandwidth. We had terabytes of images that need to travel through the network from workstations to servers, so that was a good thing that we did. No iSCSI, that's just the network. That's the host NIC. Storage, we have two storage arrays, CX700 with 10 terabytes and CX200 with 1 terabyte. Use Navisphere. The bottom line here, it was very easy. I mean, I don't want to endorse EMC or VMware or anything, but it was very easy for us to find documentation since we used EMC. Most of the documentation were just straightforward. They mentioned VMware ESX configuration, special configuration for ESX using EMC, Navisphere, and SnapView and stuff. Those of you who are system administrators know that the one of the 10 commandments of system administration is automate everything. We love to automate everything. We want everything to be automated. So I wanted to have an unattended installation. I installed one ESX server 2.5 and created a script installation and installed everything from that script installation. The rest of the machines I used the script installation. That worked just fine. Used NFS share on the same server and created an image to boot the machines from. I don't think it's recommended for less than 4 or 5 servers. It doesn't worth time that you spend to create a scripted installation if you have less than 5 servers. But one of the reasons was that we're planning to replace hardware. I wanted to have a scripted installation for every server when we need to replace the hardware or just to boot, reboot the machine or boot the new server with the script installation and get it ready. And it worked. Also, with limited resources, I'm the only person who managed the whole thing. We wanted to have a script that can recreate what I did. One thing that we used is existing tools. I like to use existing tools. Why do we have tools if we're not using them? We use Dell OpenManage extensively throughout the whole data center. So I use the Dell Remote Access Card, which has a different IP address, to install ESX servers. All what I did is just go to the IP address of that rack, which is off the network. It's a different IP, it's a PCI card on the server that has a different IP address on the protected VLAN. When there, I got to the remote access, and there is a way to remote the floppy. I put here the IP address of the TFTP server, and then put the name of the ESX server that I want to rebuild, and then click here, server reboot. And once it's rebooted, I just sit down and relax and watch it install everything as it was. Since this one was made from the script installation. That was in 2.5. But when we upgraded to ESX 3.0, we used different approach. I'll show you there. This is what we used. Since we're geeks, we wanted to learn more about it, so we remastered the ESX server CD. We created our own ESX server installation CD. The information I got, most of those were from VMTN forums and vmprofessional.com. A lot of resources in the community. I really think that sharing information with community is very important. So we remastered our CD. We put the kickstart file created by script installation on the CD itself and copied that CD, give everybody in data center a copy of the CD. Anytime we want to reboot, we want to restore a machine, we just put the CD in the CD-ROM, boot it, and type RTI ESX 02, for example, enter, and relax. The next thing that we want to do is to integrate that with VXE, to put that CD image on a RIS server that we already have, existing tool, and anytime we want to reinstall a machine, we just boot from VXE, and we didn't even need to go to the data center. Every time we need to rebuild a machine or install a new machine, even the clean install of ESX 3.0 was through this CD. There's a problem here. What happened when 3.0.1 came out? I need to redo the whole thing. So just something to remember. Upgrade is not very easy. When every time there is a new patch or a new upgrade, you need to remaster the machine or use ESX update, which I'm going to talk about briefly. This is the kickstart file, just a sample of a file that was, it's just a, for those of you who didn't use it, it's just a small text file that you can easily change anything you want in the scripted file. And you can even put the root password, and this is our root password if anybody is interested to hack into our. No, this is probably if you crack this hash, you'll find my daughter's name. One thing that helped us during the installation or during the implementation was P2V and RDM. I didn't think that they are that important. Most of the machines that developers were using were tied to big amount of storage. We had one server connected to a LUN, 1.3 terabyte LUN. It had all the imagery for West Virginia and it's shared, it's public domain, it's shared, it get access 24 hours. We wanted less downtime, we wanted to virtualize the machine with less headache. This is what we did. We used B2B, and the machine, once the machine was B2B, I could easily create a RDM and work in just a few hours. Just a few hours to convert a machine from B2B. I mean, I did B2B for smaller machines, but this one was a challenge. I saw that it would be harder. It wasn't. It was pretty straightforward, saved me a lot of time, and it's still working till now. So we used B2B to virtualize the machine and then installed ESX on the original machine. Another reason for RDM, not because only it's very big, also we were planning to expand it. We wanted to extend the 1.3 terabyte to 2 terabytes. And using RDM with physical mapping, it was easy to do that without reboot. We did that on the SAN itself. Once you extend the LUN, it can present it to the Windows box, and on the fly you can do it without the reboot. If it was a VM decay, we would need to reboot the machine. Upgrade to VI3. What we did, we used the fresh install. We didn't want to do install in place. We had enough resources to create a BMFS3 LUN volume and attach one of the servers. We migrated all the machines from, I think this is ESX01. We migrated everything from ESX01 to other machines, spread the load on other machines, and then install ESX03 on this one. After we zoned it to the new LUN, installed ESX3.0 and format the LUN, and then start migrating machine one by one. Once this one is ready, we zoned it to the same storage group and install ESX3 on it, and so on. So it was pretty straightforward, easy, didn't have any problem. But it required additional resources. We had to have a big chunk of space to create a VMFS3. Our best practice for virtual center, also we didn't follow VMware recommendations strictly, we virtualized virtual center. Virtualize it, we put it on a VM, and we also distributed, put the database on a different machine, and we clustered them to get the high availability and distributed load. We created a SQL Server cluster across hosts. So if we lose this host, the database server will fail over to the other node in the cluster, and the virtual center will fail over to the other one. It worked pretty fine for 6-7 months, and then once we started thinking about HA and high availability in VI3, we said there's no reason to do that, so we destroyed this one. We kept only one set of servers, database server in the back end and virtual center front end, and we relied on the high availability on the host. But this one worked pretty fine. We didn't have any problems. I don't think we needed to reboot anything during the whole period. Security. VI3 had most of what we wanted to do. In 2.5, we had to configure the host to stop SSH access from some of the other VLANs. We disabled root access remotely on SSH, but with ESX 3.0, that's locked down out of the box. What's interesting here is first that since virtual center security model is Active Directory integrated, it worked cross domain. So we could, because RTI had different domain than Marshall. different Windows domain. And so we created the trust, and we used Marshall Domain Admins as administrators for Terrace Virtual Center, worked fine. The other thing that's, that was a nice experience is using SSL for HTTP access. As you all know, if you access the web interface for ESX server or Virtual Center, it needs SSL, and you will get that screen saying that certificate is not trusted, there's a problem with certificate, especially with IE7. Who used IE7? Who likes IE7? IE7 is good security extension for browsers, but for a system administrator, it requires some work on the back end. Many users complained about could not access VI web interface or Virtual Center web interface because IE7 didn't allow them. Well, IE7 will allow you, but that screen saying that the certificate's not trusted is not IE problem, it's our problem. We needed to fix that. So we looked around and I found that where is the place where the SSL certificate for Virtual Center is stored. And I don't know how this one got grabbed. It was a long line, so we could read it. But it's in documented settings, all users, application data, VMware Virtual Center SSL. Here you can put any certificate you can issue for that Virtual Center. So what we did, the Virtual Center it's called RTI VC3 .status.local. I created a certificate from our own certificate authority. We had certificate authority for Marshall. Every machine in the domain trusts that certificate authority, the root certificate authority. So we created a certificate for that particular name for RTI VC3T.status.local and put that certificate in here in the SSL folder here, and no problem, no more screen saying that the certificate is not trusted anymore. I posted on my blog, I posted the step-by-step of how to do that. And the same thing on the ESX server. In etc VMware SSL, you can create SSL certificate for every ESX server so you can access, when you access the HTTPS ESX server name, you don't get that pop-up message. Any question about implementation? Go ahead with the operation best practice. There are a lot of third-party tools that were used and wanted to use them also with our environment. We use OpenManage Server Administrator to monitor hardware. Part of the SLA between Marshall University and RTI is to monitor the hardware, the 8 servers. We were using OpenManage to do that. After we installed ESX, we didn't know that would work there. So we wanted to do that, wanted to install Navisphere Agent on every ESX server. We used Commvault, we wanted to do backup. Backup is a major thing for us. And we changed some Linux configuration files, especially to add a share, a Samba share, where the ISO images, we already had ISO images on Windows Server, so it was easy to just change the FS tab in ESX to mount that automatically every time the machine reboots. Also, we use IP switch WhatsApp to monitor SNMP. I'll show you that in a minute. So installing Dell OpenManage, anybody use Dell OpenManage or IBM Director, HP, OpenView, they're all the same concept. It worked just fine. This is where we got the documentation. Also worked in an hour. I installed Server Administrator on all ESX server. It worked fine. And actually, we used it to upgrade firmware on ESX hardware with no problems. We used Dell IPS system to upgrade. We used to do it with Linux and Windows. We weren't sure if it worked with ESX. It worked fine. This is all what we needed. I think this is specific to ESX. This is what Dell recommends to use with ESX. We need to open the firewall to access the web interface. and stop the servers. Work fine. This is the interface of server administrator. For those who doesn't know, you can take a look here and see, we'll show you temperature and hardware information. 5.0?
5.02?
I think 5.01 is the latest. I'm not sure. I think 5.01. Another thing we like to use in our environment, SNMP, in ESX 2.5, it was easier because it was in the interface. In VIC, I wasn't sure if it's supported by VMware. I looked on VNTN forums and looked at everybody was interested. So this is what we did. Changed the SNMPD configuration file. We added a trash thing and pointed to our management server. Here you put the management server IP address and choose the community name. I used here examples, public as a community name, IP address, didn't put anything, but we use our own community names and IP address for the management server. Start the SNMP service and make sure to start every time, but check config SNMPD on, and then test it from another box to see if it's working, and it worked. But we needed the MIPS, we needed the SNMPD MIP files. So we got those from userlib VMware SNMP MIPS on ESX servers. Those are the files. We took those and we compiled them in WhatsApp Pro. This is our management system. Anybody use WhatsApp Pro? Do you like it? Yeah, it's not very expensive and it's very customizable. So we used it to monitor every machine in Marshall. So we wanted to use it also with the ESX server, just to stay with the SLA. We wanted to monitor the hardware, we wanted to do the patches, wanted to monitor the operating system. The operating system here is ESX. Actually, we configured customized a lot of things in WhatsApp. We added our icon here for VMware. There's also additional information here and attributes, the service tag from Dell, and as you can see, everything can be tracked in here. We get messages from WhatsApp instead of from Virtual Center when disk space, I had a problem with disk space. One of the time we had a disk full, the locked disk full, and we didn't know about it, and that was bad learning experience. I had to try to start the web interface in ESX. It didn't work. I didn't know that there is a zero disk space on root. I jumped on VNTN forum. Somebody had the same problem. I learned about it. But now I get a message every time disk space is less than 20%. I get a page, and everybody in the data center group will get a message. So you can see the everything here can be monitored. We also create reports. We can show RPI reports about availability and performance from WhatsApp. We get those automatically sent every week or every month. And this is an example of the messages that we get. We get when the ESX is down, we get a message after 5 minutes, after 20 minutes, and then we get another message saying the machine is up. We used Navisphere on Linux. Weren't sure if it would work on ESX. Why we use Navisphere on Linux? The only thing that I can think of is to see the events of Navisphere agents on the ESX server. I don't think if you don't have an agent, it will work with the SAN, but you cannot see the events. So we installed the Navisphere agent on every machine. We got rid of the unmanaged icon on every host that didn't have the NavSphere agent. Any change on the host will get automatically updated on NavSphere management console. Like if you change the machine name, it will work. If you don't have NavSphere agent, change the machine name, you may get in a problem or some icons saying that there's an error or a problem. But this is what needs to be opened for NavSphere agent to work. Patch management, as I said, we use IT Assistant to upgrade the firmware. And we tried this, but this thought means that we're still working on it. It's to use the ESX update to update the ESX server. It didn't work with us since we're on protected VLAN. There is no network access. So what we're planning to do is set up a local depot to download all the updates from VMware, all updates to ESX, put them there, and point all the ESX server to get the updates from that proxy. And we're still using WSUS and Red Hat up to date. Backup. One of the major part of the SLA is to do backup. So we didn't know how backup will work. The first thing we tried, since we used Commvault, we tried to install an agent on the host. Anybody use Commvault? Yeah, we use Commvault for our backup. At the time when we started implementation, Commvault support didn't know what to do. They told us that we don't know if that's supported. You can try it on your own. So we tried to install agent on the host and create the pre-backup and post-backup scripts that we got from VMware website. It worked, but we didn't like it a lot. It's only one server. We need to configure that every time the server needs to rebuild or something. So we tried the other option, which is SnapView, to clone the whole BMFS LUN to another LUN. It also worked, but what about restore? How would we restore? We tried to zone the BMFS clone to another box to try to backup from it. We put it on a Windows. Windows freak out, wanted to destroy it, so we said, yeah, let's wait. Let's wait for consolidated backup. What we're actually implementing for the SQL servers, Oracle servers, Exchange, we have Commvault agents on them. Commvault SQL agent, Exchange agent, and Active Directory agent. All those are installed on the client. The rest of the machines now are using consolidated backup. When we installed Commvault agent on VI3, we noticed that it is supported there. There is a checkbox to open firewall. Those of you who tried to install Commvault on Linux knows that there needs to be configuration on the firewall to open certain ports. It's supported here. You can just check those and the agent will work. Also, you need the pre and post backup script. SANCLONE, like I said, worked, needed more resources. We couldn't mount it on the media agent to back it up, but it was a good DR plan. And it doesn't have any network traffic at all. Now, consolidated backup. Actually, what I want to say here, since we do 80-20, 80 planning and 20 implementation, planning for consolidated backup, planning for HA and DRS and for the whole implementation helped us to save time implementation. I got the license for enterprise version, consolidated backup, HA and DRS. In the morning, I went to lunch with this configured and working. So it didn't take a lot of time. I think that my experience with the whole thing for the whole year was that it's very easy. VMware is easy. It's not, I mean, I was considering it very complex and it was very easy. I could do it by my own, one person, and it was easier for me to learn how to implement consolidate the backup, HADRS, install ESX, than it is to get used to Office 2007 interface. I mean, I know why they changed the whole thing, but so what we did, one thing that I really liked and I had it on my plan before I even got the license is I wanted to use Commvault Media Agent. I didn't want to have any network traffic. Commvault supported now in SP3, in Service Pack 3, 6.1 Service Pack 3. It's supported, consolidated backup supported. They have documentation you can download from Commvault Maintenance Advantage. And it's pretty straightforward. You just need to create a two batch files, pre-backup, pre-scan and post-backup jobs. And I installed those on the media agent that is attached directly to the tape library and work fine. We don't have any network traffic. The backup goes from the SAN to the tape library. We do D to T to T, disk to tape. So we have even the copy disk to disk is from the SAN to a SAN LUN. So it was all in the media agent. So the media agent is our proxy, our VCD proxy. The only thing that we need to mention here is that this is a set of ESX servers in production at the point at the time, and we have a VMFS LUN. The only thing that we need to do is just put that LUN, zone it in the same storage group with the media agent. So we gave Windows access to that LUN. And also there is, on the documentation, on VMware documentation for consolidated backup, there is an important step that you need to do is to disable auto mount, so Windows will not grab it and format it for you and start writing your resume. That helped us a lot with saving backup agents, because RCI bought backup agent for every physical server. They didn't want to backup. They didn't want to buy one for every virtual machine. That worked fine. We needed only one license on the proxy, on the PCP proxy, which is the media agent, to backup every VM, and that backup is file at the file level. So we can just say we don't want to backup the whole OS partition. We want it to backup only the images, the folder that developers knew that this is going to be backed up. So they created folders they wanted to back up or a whole drive. And we set up one script for every machine and created a subclient in Commvault. This is an example of subclient, RTI Bez02. And this is the pre-scan script location and post-scan script location. And both scripts can be found on Commvault documentation. It's only one line of batch file. So it worked fine. It's just a nice thing to show HA and DRS. As I said, it took me only one morning to implement VCD, HA, and DRS. As you can see, our cluster now is a big pool of CPU resources and memory. So we have 62 gig of memory total on those. I told my colleague, it was as exciting to see HA and DRS working as it was exciting to see vMotion the first time. The first time I saw vMotion, I was, wow. And this is another wow. When I went to one of the ESX servers in production and rebooted, and all the VMs, the VMs didn't care. The machine was down, and the whole infrastructure was still working. The machine jumped to other ESX server. And another thing that I liked was the recommendation for vMotion. We didn't set it. Also, I like total full automation, but we're still now on the partially automated DRS, Distributed Resource Scheduler. So it will show us that there are two machines that need to be migrated, maybe because some of the machines are CPU intensive on the same server, it will recommend that to move one of them to a less busy server. The other thing that we started to do is we created the resource pool, one for low CPU, high mem, and one for low mem, high CPU. So we put low memory, high CPU machines in this pool, and the database servers actually put them on the low CPU, high memory. And a few months ago, we were trying to run a scheduler to suspend some of the machines that had a lot of CPU needs, to suspend those during the week and resume them at the end of the week so they work over the weekend. We had a pretty big process to compress all those images that needs a lot of CPU cycles. So instead of using the schedule, that's what we were trying to do. It didn't work because some of the process will break after resume. But now it works with the DRS. So the machines are always up, but they are in the low CPU, high mem resource pool. So when there is available, and they have less shares, CPU shares. So over the weekend, other machines are not very busy, so that process can take more CPU cycles. But during the week, we're not afraid of that process to kill other machines. To conclude, I want to summarize the challenges we had. As I said, user involvement at early stages might be a barrier, but I highly recommend to have them with you from the first day. The other thing, in some cases, there is a need to re-architect the data center, so management needs to know about it. If you need to split VLANs and change anything, any IP addresses or something, they need to know about it, that ESX is not just installing a new operating system. It may require a little bit of re-architecture. Network performance, we had an issue with network performance, as I said. We added the two network card, the dual NIC card, and we used three NICs for VMs and one NIC for vMotion and Service Console. We really think that securing the host is very critical. And as I said, I believe in the physical protection on the VLAN, on the network, not on the host. The host is still prone to some attacks, denial of service or brute force, but if you have them on a VLAN with nobody can access that VLAN except you, it's more secure. And there is a risk here that users, that those problems are actually, because we didn't have them probably at the beginning of the project, they start asking for VMs every week, and now they ask every day. They want VMs, and a friend of mine, he told me that you're doing like McDonald's, just fast food, you don't care, just create new VMs and give them VMs, that's not a good thing, because they had only 8 servers, they wanted to expand to 14 servers, but now they have 38 servers. They don't consider backup agent license, they didn't consider OS license. I mean, universities don't, we have a volume license, so they were asking for VMs and they wanted more VMs, but if they were at the beginning of the project, if we sit down with them and we told them that, hey, you need to think about this, you need to go through the same process that you do for physical machines, and don't think that this is easy. It's not installing a new application, it's a whole machine. The other thing that everyone now wants to create clone as backup. Anytime they want to make a small change to the GIS application, they create a clone. We gave them access, and I really support the idea about giving users access, or everybody access to their own machines. Because at the beginning, we were centralized administration. I was the only person who had access to the data center. So if they reboot a machine, go to start, shut down, instead of choosing restart, they choose shut down. They lose access to the whole machine. That happened many times. They call me at home, says, I'm sorry, I shut down the machine, and tomorrow morning we have a presentation in somewhere, and you need to put the machine up. Now they can do that, getting BI clients, remote console, with the machine. So it's good. The problem is that we gave them access to create snapshots and clones. They didn't know exactly what the difference. So started creating clones on every new small change. They would create a clone of the whole machine. And now we've got the whole terabyte full of clones. And they didn't know which one is the good one. So that was not a very good experience. As I said, the licensing issue. We didn't have a lot of OS licensing issues. But I think now we started the process of creating a small form for every developer. If they need a new machine, they need to start filling out this form, what the need of the machine, and we had three color code. If the machine is red, that means the machine needs to be backed up, need to have full support, and it's not for any testing. If the machine is green, which is lowest support, that means they're playing around with the machine. We can shut it down, there is no problem. If we find the machine down, we don't need to monitor it. We don't need to point what's up to monitor the machine. So that will help probably. The other thing, as I said, creating the clones and snapshots and stuff, we got a lot of disk space problems. Not the problems, but we noticed that every time they create a new machine, they might say that I want 20 gigs, but we have a lot, let's take 50. So we have a lot of BMDKs that are not used. And we got to the same problem that we had originally. We had the resource utilization problem. We got to this resource utilization. So now part of that form, they should mark, I need 20 gigs, and the reason why they need 20 gigs. If they need the terabyte, they need to say why they need the terabyte, because one of the machines, they wanted 700 gigs in a BMDK, and that needs us to be involved. I mean, it's their machine, but we need to know why they need 700 gigs. And to conclude, this is what we learned. The 80-20 works. 80% planning, project management, documentation, and only 20% needed for implementation. Installing ESS will take 30 minutes. But to install the drive probably will take many days of planning and documentation. Use existing management tools. We already have a lot of tools. We need to use them. And all tools that we have work with ESX as anything else. Automate whenever it's possible. Scripted installation is a good example. Spare resources were very useful. We had a spare machine to try installing ESX. We had a spare LUN to install a clean, fresh installation of VMFS 3. So spare resources are very useful. We had them. We were fortunate to have those. And also remember that ESX is basically using Linux commands. So changing fstab to mount Windows SAMDA drive or any SSH configuration that you already practice in Linux can work. Also a lot of features in VMware, and it's very exciting to use those. And virtualization was a very exciting experience for myself, and I hope it is also for you. Thank you very much. If you have any question, if not, you can download the copy of the presentation from the website, and my personal blog is listed on the first page. If you need more information about specific slides, I posted some notes on my blog, and my email is there. You can contact me if you have any questions. Thank you. Excuse me?
How are you configured to
talk to
your SAN?
Should
I
send
you a fiber channel?
Fiber channel. Well, we used the EMC recommendation to configure our SAN. We have dual HDA on every machine. We have dual switches, fiber channel switches, and every machine has four paths to the SAN array.
That's usually
Well, that was recommended by EMC Dell. We had a contract with EMC Dell. We told them about the whole project, and that's what they recommended. That was not recommended for ESX, but being at the conference here, I learned that it was the same best practice for what we had for GIS worked fine for ESX. Had four paths from the ESX to the SAN through dual port HPAs and two fiber channel switches. We didn't ask. I'm not sure if Esri has any.
Do you have any problems afterwards if you didn't import that you never noticed or?
Nobody noticed. Actually, one thing that we had an issue with Exchange. Yeah, I remember now. Our Exchange administrator had an issue with having Exchange on a VM. When I'm not sure if he talked with the Microsoft support or just looked at their website, but he told me that it's not supported, and don't say it to anybody, but Microsoft does not support it. But we're running it now. We're running Exchange on a VM. We're running a BES, a BlackBerry Enterprise server on a VM, SQL Server, Oracle. We didn't try Oracle Rack on VM. We would like to, but we have SQL Server cluster working fine. And we're still less than a year of experience. We're probably going to run through a lot of things with other vendors. You have a question?
Did you have any issues with Exchange, or was it just all Microsoft marketing issues?
We didn't have technical issues with Exchange, but the decision to install Exchange originally was we were discussing that, and we had some people who didn't want it to be on a virtual machine because Microsoft doesn't support it, but we're using it on a VM.
Can you go over quickly how you configure Exchange?
Well, I recommended to use RDM, and we created a LAN, and I don't remember why our Exchange administrator was more comfortable to create a VNTK file for his mailboxes. I created the LAN because Exchange has some characteristics, and probably it needs different I/O and different and that was one reason. The other reason we were thinking about, hey, maybe it doesn't work on a VM. Maybe in the future we want to go back to a physical machine. So that's why I recommended to use RDM. We started that, but our Exchange administrator said, I'm fine. I'm very comfortable with VMware, and I'm going to do it on a VMDK. Keep the LAN there. If I need it, I will migrate the mailbox there. But we're using strictly VMDK files. The LAN is not in use. One of the slides was about patch management. I didn't go deeply in that, but we use WSUS, Windows Software Update Server, to upgrade all the Windows machines. And any machine that's in the red, like I said, red color, that means it needs to be monitored and patched and all that. But if it's in the green, that means it doesn't have external access to the network. It's just contained in the testing network. So those machines, we were not monitoring them. We're not we don't add them to WSUS server. But all Windows machines, we update them with Windows software update service. And the Red Hat machines, every time you install Red Hat, when you register the machine in Red Hat network, it will get added to the pool, so we can see and patch the machine centrally. But we only have three machines, four Red Hat machines.
Okay.
One of them is actually proxy server to let the ESX server get access to the network if needed, or other machines that are not on the production VLAN. All the machines in the management VLAN, they don't have external access at all. So one of the VMs, we got a virtual appliance for Squid proxy, and the protected VLAN use that proxy to get occasionally access externally. But I would have to go and resume the machine first and manually go. For example, our Commvault server is hosted on the protected VLAN. That VLAN doesn't have anybody, nobody will access this VLAN except my workstation and the same VLAN. So if we need to download service pack from Commvault, I'll resume the Squid VM and start the download. It will work through that proxy and then shut it down, shut the proxy down. I'm sorry, I ran out of them in the, but if you download this session, I have my website and all my information on the first slide.
As opposed to having a dedicated physical box for that?
Well, first we didn't have a lot of physical servers to do that because we wanted to virtualize all the machines. We wanted to use all the machines as ESX hosts. So we didn't want to dedicate a machine with 12 gigs of memory to do that. And we didn't want to install it on a desktop class machine. So I said, let's try to run it on a VM. But the other reason was cloning the virtual center was useful in a couple, three times. Like during the upgrade from 2.5 to 3.0, ESX 2.5 to 3.0, we migrated all the machines using the virtual center 1.5, the previous one. And after we finished migration, the only machine that was up was that box. And wanted to shut down the host to upgrade it, so I cloned the machine and migrated to one of the new ESX servers and booted. Actually, I had them both working and upgraded the database. I created a backup, a clone of the database, and upgraded the database, upgraded the virtual center, log into the other machine, make sure it's working, registered the host, and then shut down that host and upgrade it. So it worked even better to have it on a VM. I was worried about that when we got to the point that we want to upgrade to 3.0. I thought maybe it wasn't a good idea to go with the VM for virtual center, but it worked fine. Didn't have any downtime, only an hour.